So here we are to have some fun and get curious about what is it to be connected to the source? What is it to be connected to the source of life?
What is it to be connected to the source of life? Ask a tree. Ask basically anything other than a human.
Ooh. Straight up.
Being what one is. In the egoic pursuit of quote-unquote enlightenment, quote-unquote making it there, getting there, the destination.
Somewhere to go, right. Something to accomplish, something to achieve.
Within that dynamic, what is about to be said is extremely anticlimactic and not interesting. Because that pursuit of something else doesn't want to hear that to be in that connection with the source of aliveness is to simply just be yourself.
To be what you already are, here and now, in this moment. It's nowhere else.
Yeah.
There's nothing to accomplish. You don't have to go to the Himalayas and meditate for 10 hours a day. Though there are various access points, sure. You don't need anything other than what you are, what you have, what you are. I love that so much.
Yeah.
Being what you already are. Yeah. There's nowhere to go.
In the Tao Te Ching, there's a line that confounded me for a while, especially as a person who traveled a lot. The line is more or less, this is the Stephen Mitchell translation, more or less it says the master, this fictitious entity who is living in the Tao.
What is the master?
The master is this fictitious person who's living in the Tao.
Thank you.
And so the master, quote unquote, travels all day without ever leaving home.
Ooh.
And that it doesn't land for somebody who's trying to find something somewhere else.
Who is seeking outwardly, who understands that what it is to be found is somewhere else, is outside, is something to be accomplished, acquired, achieved.
And so it's a funny thing to observe. Within oneself or within others, we're all one. The reflex, let's call it, when the awareness is put out there, everything that one may think they need somewhere else in order for pure connection with the source of aliveness is speaking every word that you ever speak.
Ooh.
Is breathing every breath and beating every heartbeat that you ever have. Already here now, alive, it is the moistness of your eyes.
Ooh.
And there's some people that just cringed because I said the word moist.
The moistness of your eyeballs. That's amazing.
You know? And that doesn't sound very appealing. Or it's no, certainly there's got to be more.
Surely there must be more. Yeah, it can't.
So what is it to live in that? What is it to, because somebody who is trapped in ego, is trapped in mental activity and all of this stuff, is like, no, it's not. The essence of aliveness could not possibly be here because I am suffering. I am miserable. There's this, all this calamity.
I'm constantly struggling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm struggling here. There must be something I have to do to find peace and harmony and ease. There must be something I have to do.
And so what that assumes is that there's something, and this is baked into Western culture, and the whole model of learning is that there's something that I need to acquire, something else that I need to acquire that I don't already have. I am lacking something required for this connection with all of life, so I must go on this grand quest in order to find it, right? And I'm not going to deny that through the quest, like the word question, the quest I'm on, question,
ooh,
the quest I'm on,
ooh,
I'm not going to deny that the quest itself is rich,
mm,
and very well worth going on, if that's what suits you, you know. And there's a very direct line we have mistaken in the West, especially, that says, I must acquire something that I don't already have in order to get this thing that I am not.
That I'm lacking. That I'm lacking.
Right, right. Which is heavily baked into, like, the religious context and all this kind of stuff, too. The person getting down to brass tacks with it, the person struggling, that's saying, surely I am missing something here. Surely I need to get something else, somewhere else. Something needs to be added on in order to find that thing. It's actually, to put it into words, a subtractive process.
Yes.
And the metaphor or the imagery that has spoken to me through this is the image of a great big window. And on the other side of this window, you're inside the, say, house, and there's this immense panoramic window, full 360.
Ooh, ooh.
What one doesn't see in this particular moment as we set the stage is that there's this immense landscape of wonder outside the window. One doesn't see that because the window is clouded with, say, 20 some odd years, 40 some odd years, 50 some odd years, insert here your age, however many years of dust,
funk.
Of funk,
straight funk,
of rain, of dirt, of wind, of dust, of conglomerations of all this stuff, and the windows are caked
with that funk.
Yeah, funk cake.
Yum.
When I say that acknowledging or recognizing or living in that connectedness with the source of aliveness is a subtractive process, what I mean when I say that is it's a clarification of the window to be able to see what's already there. The clarification comes through removing the things that have been stacked on, whether culturally or conditioning by your parents or by one's own attempt to grasp for something. All of these things have been added on to the foundation, which is the essence of existence. When a baby comes through, they're the essence of existence. You look into that baby's eyes and you feel peace and you feel calm, maybe until they need to shit or something, you know, then there's the essence of existence is roaring through,
yep,
right? In a different way. But when that baby is at equilibrium, typically when people look into a baby's eyes, they feel very peaceful, they feel a lot of love, they feel joy, they feel these things, because they're just abiding in the essence. Nothing has been really stacked on top of them yet.
Yes.
They may immediately find themselves in circumstances that that create a dissonance with the essence, right? Because they're put into dissonant circumstances around people who are living in that dissonance. So very quickly it can happen.
Mm-hmm.
However, generally speaking, babies are existing in the essence of existence. Things get stacked on top of us through the learning process, through the process of adopting culture, name, identity, language, all of this kind of stuff. And now we're working with these caked windows. And so rather than adding anything more to those windows, there's two ways about this process, which is just coming to me. I haven't considered it in this way.
Ooh.
Typically, that subtractive process says, start cleaning the windows, basically, right? That can be a never-ending journey. There's also something about cracking the windows, breaking the windows,
opening
the windows, opening the windows, opening the windows,
mm,
stepping through the door that you didn't realize was there, You know, because the house is cluttered too.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a hoarder's house.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the door has all this stuff stacked up in front of it and you can't even get out because you didn't even know there was a door there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's stacked. There's these stacks of file cabinets and stuff of all your memories and all these associations and all these things that you think you're supposed to be. Right? And it's hiding the door and hiding the windows. And perhaps sifting through enough of that reveals a doorway.
Clearing enough out of the way of the doorway. You don't need to clean the whole house before you step outside.
You can't, because dust keeps forming.
Yep. It's not about becoming anything. It's about unbecoming all that you're not. And
yeah.
It's not about, adding anything to yourself. You are inside the house whole. And when you said perhaps it's about cracking the window, opening the door, clearing enough out of the way of the door to exit the house, to step, and it's not anywhere to go, it's something to join, like joining with life, stepping outside and joining what's here, like just joining, you bringing yourself to it, though it's
yes.
not somewhere to go, or it's not a place to be mm-hmm. anywhere other than here,
right.
I guess. It's not a physical place to go. You don't need to go to the mountain, to the
right.
monastery, to the whatever. It's right. joining, participating, what's here now, here
yeah.
now, key, here now.
Yeah, and in that imagery of the house is already there. One is just inside the walls. Right? And isolating oneself from that which surrounds, right? And the house is basically the ego,
mm-hmm.
is the individual identity.
Mm-hmm. And we are stuck in that isolation inside of the whole thing.
Right.
So it's, you know, we're inside of the whole thing.
Yeah. It's like the house is like a Russian nesting doll, and it's the smaller doll within a larger context.
Yes.
Right? Recognizing that that happens through the process of getting bombarded by culture, by parents, by all the things, you know.
From the very beginning.
From the get-go. From, you know, I came out of, this body came out of the womb with the umbilical cord wrapped around its neck.
Mm-hmm.
It came out blue.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately bombarded by the threat of existence,
mm-hmm.
you know. Shoo! Didn't waste a second.
Mm-hmm. right?
And
actually, even before in the womb, we are absorbing.
Yeah.
We absorb.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
There's no place for self-shame in it, in any of it. Though not to deny shame, or not to shame the shame.
Right.
Rather, there is medicine in zooming out to the bigger picture and seeing, no wonder, that's the medicine, you know. We have access to medicine for shame, and it is simply in willingness to see the bigger picture, willingness to zoom out for that perspective.
Yeah, yeah. And it's fascinating because in the acknowledgement of these things we're speaking of, one inevitably moves the fuck out of that house.
Yep. Once you know of what's on the other side, once you can see,
mm-hmm.
once the clutter is cleared a bit and you get even the smallest glimpse, say the whole window is obstructed by clutter. It's like something falls on accident, whether or
Ooh.
Not you even consciously chose to clear something. Something falls and you get this little glimpse. Wait, what? Whoa! Wait, there's this whoa, you get a little glimpse of the beauty of life, of
yeah.
what's outside
yeah.
the prison.
Yeah, yeah, the mind-made prison.
Mind-made prison.
Yeah, and so one inevitably moves out of the house, and it's ironic because it's not about going and doing anything in particular in order to find something. However, once the maybe recognition, or once the acknowledgement, or once the awareness, more accurately, is there, once one has stepped outside of the house and breathed the fresh air and felt the sunlight, so to speak, typically one either just gets out of that house, gets away from there, or goes back in and starts to try to clean it out. You know, it maybe can Yeah, you can, like, rearrange and organize and burn stuff and, you know, burn through a lot of the egoic identification and stuff and be able to live within that construct, that construction, reasonably well, you know, and maybe build a deck, you know, so to speak, and have more outdoor space, you know. And oftentimes, it's almost just stepping away from that altogether and kind of starting fresh. You know, that's a lot of people will just like change their name and go do something else, you know, because what ends up happening quite often is whatever it is that we've been living in, like in the practical world, no longer in the metaphor, but in like real life, our actual home situation.
Circumstance, life situation.
Yeah. Our actual life situation of home, of maybe marriage, of all of these kinds of things. Oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes that almost immediately expires because it's a manifestation of all of those attempts and pursuits to find something to fill the void that we thought was there when it was just a misunderstanding of what's going on. And so typically to live in that soup is not fun, not enjoyable. It's there's oftentimes a deep recognition of, oh my Lord,
where we are is not where we want to be, or where we are to be,
right?
Where we've gotten ourselves in, that where we've ended up is not
conducive to living in our essence. It's conducive to seeking external sources of okayness.
Where we are is not supportive of
the essence. And basically that is happening on a large scale within the greater context of like human civilization and like Western culture, and a lot of people, you know, through the pandemic and all this kind of stuff recognized, oh my God, what am I doing with my life? This is crazy. I'm sitting still for the first time and like this is way out of whack.
Where I'm sitting, it ain't it.
And so on a large scale this is happening, and it is worth saying that the deep dive, so to speak, into one's essence and the clarification and like the reorientation, as you say, can often come with a vast rearrangement of one's life. Yes. And that doesn't necessarily mean that one even has to do that. There are people who choose to bring that into the space that they've been in and dose that space with the love and with the clarity that is coming through them. And I think that is so beautiful.
So beautiful.
So beautiful. And that's highly possible, you know? Because really the external circumstances become secondary to the feeling within and the essence within.
Yes.
And it's worth saying that a lot of people are like, I cannot live in this city of, you know, 20 million people. It's not working for me. I need to live in the trees. I need quiet. I need solitude. I need space. That's kind of more of where the individuality living through this particular vessel called Zeph, that is more conducive here. That's fine.
And for me with working corporate and finance, it's like, yeah, perhaps some are okay where they are and can bring presence to where they are in their career, say it be corporate. For me, whether or not I could or simply prefer not to, actually to be anywhere else in the world other than the office.
Yeah.
And but it doesn't have to be either way.
And that brings us to, I think, an important nuance to it in the context here of living in the essence. Because what I heard you say is that there is a sort of preference, right? And one could quickly say, if you're looking at it, is, well, does the essence really have preference? You know,
isn't that ego?
And so here lies the kind of paradox, or I would say the balance. And again, sourcing my own experience of going to the absolute brink of ego death and following that journey, I recognize that, yeah, the ego is my best friend, actually, and that we talked about that in the last episode. And so suffice to say that there is not a need to kill or deny or be done with the ego, but rather finding the ego's proper place, the individual's proper place, which I would define basically with words as being the ambassador or the spokesperson for existence, for life itself. Much like the radio plays the song, but isn't that which is performing the song.
It's
playing the recorded version of the song. And so the ego is the radio, the essence is the musician. Or you could say that the instrument, the guitar, is the ego, and the person playing the song,
the musician
is the essence. And so when you say there's a preference, there is a harmonious balance with, we are in this plane, we are embodying and inhabiting these individual bodies. It's the essence doing that, and it doesn't do any good to deny the fact that there's an individualistic, dualistic experience going on here. That's just not fundamentally the essence of our existence.
We are human beings. We are human beings. We are both.
We are being human.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We are humans being. We are being human.
Being.
Life is being human.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Being is having some fun as humans.
Yeah, and so where that is an obvious reality comes a certain balance where, yeah, preferences can exist and be fine. You know, do you want to play metal music all the time? Or would you probably be able to write that book a little bit more smoothly if you're listening to some nice pleasant music or hearing the birds chirping?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine to have those preferences. We are in this individual existence. However, I would say the line is drawn when that preference is attempting to ascertain or get something from a place of need.
Yes. Yes.
Right? And let's take like the basic needs of the individual existence, which is like food. Let's start with food. People have immense preferences around food, right? And one's preferences around food tend to reflect the extent to which they're living in the ego.
Mm.
When somebody's highly specific about their food needs, there's a lot of grasping there typically. And I want to say that there's a lot of conditions and things like that that go into this stuff. We don't need to go into that rabbit hole.
It feels like what you're speaking to is the degree of attachment.
Yeah.
The intensity of attachments we have on our preferences. There can be a wonderful pointer to where we're at in embodying the ego or the essence.
Yeah. And so take the example of when I was vegetarian and I was traveling through the Andes Mountains in Ecuador, and I was invited by a local family into their home. It was a Quechua family. There's Quechua and Quechua. It's a Quechua family. And they invited me into their home. And the father of the household went out and killed one of their animals. And for the afternoon, I helped in the process of butchering the animal, of cleaning it, of preparing it and cooking it, and then it was placed upon the table to be eaten. And this whole time I'm having this experience.
And how long had you been?
At least a year, probably closer to 2 years, maybe,
mm-hmm.
that I had been vegetarian. And it was on the grounds of, like, sort of like moral grounds, like not wanting to support the commoditization of animals,
mm-hmm.
right? And to deny the immensely precious gift of being honored in that household.
Invited in
and given the absolute royal treatment.
Mm.
Being blessed with this immense offering of this sheep that was loved and given life by this family. To deny the gift of that entering my body and fueling me.
Mm.
Is preposterous.
Mm.
And that's where the attachment, the preference, comes secondary to the obvious reality surrounding us.
Mm. There could have been, there was the opportunity for you to cling to that attachment and say, nope, I am a vegetarian. I'm attached to that concept. That was the opportunity for the attachment to be clung to and held on to and grasped.
Right. And rather, what I would say is that would have just been an immense denial of graciousness, of grace, of generosity,
mm.
of love.
What was actually present,
yeah.
in that moment,
yeah.
was offering love, kindness,
mm-hmm.
offering
yeah.
in general,
yeah.
was actually present.
Yeah.
And you oriented yourself to that present instead of holding on to some idea of being a vegetarian, which actually isn't even real.
Right.
It's an idea. It's a concept.
Yeah.
It's a label. It's an identification. It's an attachment.
Yeah.
It doesn't actually exist. In the present,
mm-hmm.
in the real.
And so that brings an interesting facet of it where that's a good example. And I realize there's so many different aspects of, you know, around food, and I don't want
yeah.
to diminish that.
Yeah.
However, one can say to even have the possibility of being so specific about one's food preferences, in order for that to exist, there's got to be an immense access to food options.
Mm.
One who is food insecure, and we're talking very food insecure, does not have the luxury to have such extreme preferences and saying no, 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 no. Yes. When a particular tree fruits and there is something available to be eaten, doesn't matter how stank that fruit is. Doesn't matter if it's a little bit brown on one
mm-hmm.
side.
Mm-hmm.
I'm eating that.
Mm-hmm.
That is sustenance.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so it's important, I think, to acknowledge that the access to resources that exists in, you know, the what we can call the quote-unquote developed world often can breed the opportunity to become so narrow in our preferences.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not surrounded by grocery stores and an immense network of you know, moving food around the earth,
mm-hmm.
that possibility can't even come to exist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's beautiful to broaden our perspectives.
Yeah.
And to recognize, to kind of shine light on our preferences to recognize where our attachments live, mm-hmm. very strongly, and to just kind of zoom out a bit, just to really willingness to zoom out, and a willingness to look at our preferences, our attachments, a different way, perhaps a little objectively, as opposed to being so bound by them, really. Yeah. Yeah. And just looking, curiosity, mm-hmm. perspective, just looking.
Yeah. And I would venture to say that a lot of the preferences are based around the egoic feeling of a need for control. When one feels out of control or out of touch with the essence of life, which doesn't need to control anything, one seeks that in the ways one can. And that is often through like highly developed preferences, you know?
Mm. That brought me to, when you said the ego seeking control brings me to surrender, which brings me all the way back to what we were discussing of what is it to exist connected to the essence of life. There's nothing to go get. There's nothing to become. It's about surrendering to what we already are.
Yeah.
Surrendering to what we are.
Yeah.
There is nothing else to become.
Yeah. 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 You can see those preferences as one of the file cabinets stuck in that house.
I love the house image, because in hearing that it's what we already are, it's another thing to experience that and to know that on a deep level. And it's okay if in the initial hearing it is just knowledge without the understanding. Like, that's okay. I think it's a beautiful recognition to point oneself to, whether or not it lands so deeply in hearing it. Perhaps one gets to hear it a million times before it's really felt and understood. That's okay. But I love the house image, because it's like being stuck inside a house and the glorious fresh air or the magic life is outside the house. It's like, can it be understood that it's never not there? Life is here. It's all here. There's nowhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one, you know, within that metaphor, I remember helping build a house, and we were showing it, you know, it was finished, and we're showing it, and everyone's, oh, I love like what you did with the walls, and you know, ooh, that's nice tile, and oh wow, nice sink choice, you know? Great. And I was giggling to myself, because part of what I had helped with was the laying of the foundation of the house. And what nobody in their right mind, unless they're like a builder, you know, or an architect or something, nobody comes up to a freshly built house and says, what a lovely foundation that is. look at those underbeams, you know. Wow, you really got it right.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's amazing, that mm-hmm. foundation.
Those floor joists. Wonderful. Look at that strapping. Oh man. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Nobody goes there, right?
Mm-hmm. And yet, we're not so much attuned.
And that's holding the whole thing up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like how we miss the essence, holding up that whole house of ego. Nobody's paying any attention to the foundation. How is that house even standing? Listen to your heartbeat. How is that happening? And like, don't ask from the standpoint of needing to find an answer. It's the question, the quest I'm on, the question, the quest. Just journey into it. Just go there and just wonder without grabbing for an answer.
That's so big. And hearing the questions, and how is it that my heart's beating? Okay, I'm going to ask myself this question, and I'm going to not think anything. I'm just going to sit and be yeah. in the question.
Yeah.
Like, without thinking. Like, this is not to be thought. This
right.
is not to be thought of.
Because good luck.
Yeah.
You're not going to find an answer suitable.
Uh-huh. You know? The only way to feel what the question's actually pointing one to is to just sit in it. Like, don't do anything.
Yeah.
Just sit and feel. And just be, surrender.
Yeah, surrender. Listen to your heartbeat. Listen to the pulse of aliveness.
Mm.
The rhythm of aliveness. The mind can say, well, the brain is telling it to do that, but just keep going. Okay, well, what's telling the brain to do that? Can you feel the brain and its electric circuitry firing like little lightning bolts in your skull? Who's telling it to do that? Maybe someone would be like, well, the DNA and like the genes are expressing themselves and stuff. Okay, the gene is expressing itself, so it has a voice. What built its vocal cords, so to speak? You know, who gave the blueprint its blueprint, you know, so to speak. And you just keep following it back. Wherever your mind feels like it does have an answer, ask, just like kids do. Children are brilliant in this. Well, why? And then you tell them why, and they're like, well, why? You know?
But why?
But why? And be the child in that sense, and just keep, you know, if your mind is trying to grasp for an answer, just ask about that, you know, what's beating your heart? Okay. What's doing that? Okay. What's doing that? What's doing that? What's doing that? And you will lead yourself to the brink of any sort of explanations, any sort of answering things. And that's, don't stop once you're at the brink of like the unexplainable. Go ahead and just witness that.
Mm.
Just be there with it.
Mm.
You know, just look out over the edge of that precipice at the landscape of that without, and it's like you cannot recognize a single thing out there. Just go ahead and be there in that question.
Presently.
Yeah.
So presently aware of what that space is in presence.
Yeah.
And outside of the mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Or directly within the mind. You can use the mind to take you all the way. The mind's like the car. It gets you all the way up to the edge of the cliff. And maybe you don't actually get out of the car. And you're looking through the windshield and just going, whoa, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Whatever. Because the idea of getting out of your mind is also an idea.
Mm-hmm.
So just wipe that whole slate clean and just go there. And just, yeah, the heartbeat. If you can start just there, and you don't have to follow the rabbit hole to its great extent, and because the mystery is right there in the heartbeat, just listen. Wow, that's wild. Whoa, this thing's been happening since before I was even, you know, born into this physical realm.
Right.
Before I was even breathing with my lungs, this heartbeat was happening. And wow, that's bizarre.
The whole time.
Yeah.
It brings us to that bing light bulb the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
The whole time life. The whole time the essence, the connection. Even when we're disconnected, fundamentally, we still are, always have been the isness, right?
Yeah. We've always been connected, even if we have mentally and disidentified ourselves from that connection. You can't be alive and not be alive.
Never anything else. Mm-hmm. Nowhere else.
Yeah.
Here. Mm-hmm. Here.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.